Hello, everybody. Welcome to Nerd Spastics.
Welcome back.
It's the week of May 18th, and as always, we're here to discuss this week's news in gaming, film, television, everything in between. I'm Sean.
And I'm Tristan.
And as we have Jacob back here today.
Hey, Spastics fans.
Thanks for joining us, Jacob.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be back.
Everybody seemed to really enjoy you, so we thought, you know, we'd bring you back for a second time around.
I am the special nerd sauce here. Yes.
So, Jacob, you have a blog.
I do indeed. It is Postmodern Pulp, and it's all about film, television, vintage paperbacks, comic books, all things geeky and nerdy out there.
Very cool. Well, actually, we'll post that onto the Facebook site for you guys if you want to take a look. And we'll start off today with, as always, some toasty video game news. All right, so the first thing in Toasty Video Game News is more stuff about LEGO Dimensions, which we talked about last week, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yes. So LEGO Dimensions was this huge game with all these different properties they just got. Well, they just released a trailer with Christopher Lloyd reprising his role as Doc Brown.
It was actually a pretty high-quality, high-production trailer, too. It was surprising.
Yeah, and it's kind of short, but it's still, they showed some quick gameplay, but I think more people really enjoyed it. I know I did, seeing Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown again.
Oh, he was definitely able to pull it off. I was a little nervous at first, but within like 5 seconds, I'm like, oh, man, he still got it.
He's definitely, he looks a lot older, but he still has that Doc Brown kind of crazy-eyed scientist look to him.
Yeah, especially when he's like, you know, he goes in the thing and you see the DeLorean covered up with the, you know, and everything.
That was chills. That was chills.
Yeah, I was really excited that I basically recreated his garage workshop from the films for this.
Yeah, the other thing was like when he took out his actual Lego figure, was like looking at it and talking to it.
Oh, and then he had the calipers and he's measuring all the little pieces.
Like, it was kind of cheesy and silly, but it was fun too.
It's a Lego video
game. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So overall, it does seem I'm more intrigued. I feel like Lego's really pushing this game.
Like, yeah, I mean, we're seeing a lot more publicity for this than they have for really their other games. I mean, they've made tons of games, and you'd usually see maybe a television spot or two, but it kind of seems like they're going all in on this property.
No, they really are, especially with a September release date coming up. I mean, I guess I can see why.
Well, how many other Lego video games have come out post-Lego Movie?
I think this might be the first one post-Lego Movie. They might have done another Batman. I know they did like a game for the Lego Movie, but I think this is probably the first major release since the Lego Movie.
Well, I wonder if that's a deliberate marketing decision then, you know, Lego Movie comes out, you get a much larger awareness base, then you start pushing a movie like this, because, or a video game like this, because a movie was, in a way, it had combined all those Lego properties.
And so, now you can play all those properties you saw on the big screen together.
Yeah, exactly.
So actually, it is a really smart move.
No, it really is. And that's basically what LEGO is about. They have all these properties. They might as well use them all. And it seems like they gained more, especially with, like we talked last week, like having Doctor Who. Like, that's a huge property you don't really see involved with these kind of things. I don't think I've ever seen Doctor Who with a different property.
No, and you don't really see Doctor Who in the video game space much either. I know they have, you know, a couple mobile games and little things like that, not really anything on consoles.
Yeah, most of their games are in Britain, and the console game they do have here is, I'm sorry, truly horrible. So, the first thing you're seeing of Doctor Who in a huge major game like that, it's kind of big too. And then Jurassic World on top of, you know, Portal 2, a video game franchise as well in there. It's a lot of stuff.
And kind of the interesting thing about those franchises is, off the top of my head, I cannot think of them having any actual Lego sets based on them. So these are kind of the first things where they don't have a Lego, you know, kind of the Lego bricks property already out there that they're making a game out of. It seems like this is new to the Lego universe.
Yeah, I do. I know the Simpsons do have one.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Doctor Who or Portal does.
No, I don't believe they do. Those two are two that don't have one. So, I mean, it is rather new to, like, put all these that already don't have existing stuff already.
Yeah, so I wonder if also this fall if we'll see some Portal and Doctor Who Lego sets to go along with this, like full standalone sets, or if they'll just be kind of unique to this game. And then that's the only way to get those figures.
Yeah, that's a good point. We actually, it's probably highly likely that we will see that before the film comes out or the video game comes out. There's so much stuff in there, it seems like a film. I'm sorry, it really does. All right, so on to a different sort of news. Rockstar Games is suing the BBC. So apparently Rockstar has filed a lawsuit against the BBC for trademark infringement for their upcoming drama Game Changer. I guess it's going to be a 90-minute feature that will focus on the real-life conflict between Rockstar president Sam Houser and the U.S. lawyer and outspoken critic for the GTA series Jack Thompson, with Daniel Radcliffe and Bill Paxton reprising playing the respective roles.
This is really odd that they're going off after them for this, because it's almost kind of like, what grounds, what are they hoping to achieve? Will this result in the BBC just having to change Rockstar to Rock Square for the purpose of the film? I mean, is
maybe
it just
change names and game names? Like,
yeah, you know? It's like, I don't know what their goal is, if they're trying to get the whole thing shut down, but you can't get this shut down.
No, it seems like a big project to the point where, like according to the statement Rockstar Games made was, our goal is to ensure that our trademarks are not misused in the BBC's pursuit of an unofficial description of purported events related to Rockstar Games. We have attempted multiple times to resolve the matter with the BBC without a meaningful resolution. It is our obligation to protect our intellectual property.
It always seems like any time a company does something like this, it's always negative for that company. You know, whether you win the lawsuit or not, the general public is going to look at you like you're a jerk. So I cannot see an outcome for this in which Rockstar looks better in terms of PR and publicity, you know, as opposed to just letting it go, not really making a statement or making something into the effect of, you know, the BBC, you know, this is not affiliated with us. They're doing what they want, and we really have no comment on it. You know?
Yeah, it'd almost be kind of like if Apple was suing a couple of the production companies that are doing movies about Steve Jobs, saying, like, well, we want to protect our copyright. Like, they would just come off as terrible people.
Yeah, exactly. That's just a perfect example of it.
Yeah, it's like you're kind of doing a human interest story about these events, which, you know, are obviously somewhat public or have been written about or something. I'm not familiar with the backstory of all of this. But to try to get that shut down on kind of the loosely based thing of you're trying to protect your trademark. I mean, then again, it's like it's going to make publicity for you. And no matter what, it's going to put your name into the public, which is always a good thing, even if your founder might be jerks, which Steve Jobs definitely was a terrible person to work for. He was also a genius in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, see, the thing I see about this is, to be honest, I don't know about you guys, I didn't know about this project until I hear about the lawsuit.
I heard about this before recently. So it's something that's been in the works for a little while.
Yeah, but I feel like the lawsuit in general is giving it more publicity than probably they had in general.
Yeah, so it's like the fire they're trying to put out, they're just making bigger by trying to sue them, because that's just going to stir up interest. It's like same thing happened with Dogma when the Catholic Church was protesting it. It just made people want to see it more because they heard more about it, because it made the news.
Yeah, so on to the Xbox. I know we talked about this probably a month or so ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was last month for people part of their preview program could start using this. But it looks like this month they've officially released the TV tuner in the U.S. and Canada. And so now in the most recent monthly software update, those devices are enabled for everybody. So if you hadn't heard about this before, basically Microsoft is releasing a TV tuner for their Xbox. So it just has a coax jack on one end, HDMI on the other, plugs right into your Xbox. You hook it up to an antenna, or they're selling a bundle with the tuner and antenna for $100. The tuner by itself is $60, and you can watch any over-the-air broadcasts, and Microsoft will, based on what area you're in, will figure out what the guide is for what's on at what time and everything.
Yeah, what's really intriguing about this is, it definitely helps with the cable cutting initiative that's really been going around. But also, like, the fact that they have a 30-minute DVR buffer with the Xbox One with this program. But they're also thinking about going higher than that and having a full DVR program for over-the-air free TV, which is definitely something big.
Yeah, like that would be a killer feature to add to the Xbox if they do implement it. And there's rumors that they're working on it. It's not ready yet. It'll roll out later this year, which I hope they do, because basically if you have cable, if you only watch kind of your basic local stations, you could ditch that and use your Xbox as your cable box and DVR. And then kind of the other cool functionality too is you can stream whatever is being broadcast to the Xbox through Microsoft Smart Glass app. So if you're on an iPad or Android tablet, you can watch TV and someone else can be gaming on the Xbox and someone else can be watching TV through the Smart Glass app at the same time.
So is that kind of like Google Chrome for the Xbox then? The Chromecast.
No, because basically this would be sending it from the Xbox to your tablet, but I would assume like you could do
You're talking it's like the other way around.
Yeah, so it's the other way. So it can stream from basically be like streaming from your cable box to your iPad. It'd be doing that but
through
the Xbox.
Very cool.
And I wonder if you could then AirPlay that to a full size TV.
Whoa.
I don't know if you can. I'm assuming you could. So that's kind of neat functionality. So basically, everyone in the house could be watching. It would have to be the same show because it doesn't have multiple tuners, but you could be watching the same show in all the rooms in your house from that one source.
No, it's definitely pretty cool. I'm guessing it's something that cable companies aren't going to like.
No, definitely not. And I wonder if maybe that's part of the lack of full DVR functionality as well. But then again, this is Microsoft. They don't really have ties with the cable companies in general.
Yeah.
And kind of the more interesting thing was if Microsoft enabled their other apps to stream to Smart Glass. So right now it seems like it's just going to be their TV tuner and the live TV. But, you know, Comedy Central, HBO, all those have apps on the Xbox as well. If those could stream through Smart Glass, would be interesting. But then again, they also usually have apps on other platforms already.
Yeah, so that's not a really big deal. The TV is the more
the live TV is huge, so especially for local sports and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so on to the Oculus Rift.
Get out your checkbooks.
Yes, which we talked about, I think it was last week or the week before, about they actually had like put in some sort of a release date finally.
A very broad release date.
But now we have hardware requirements that are released.
Which is kind of interesting that they're giving us hardware requirements basically a year in advance of when the product's going to come out.
It gives you time to get ready and upgrade your system.
Yeah.
Or a brand new system.
It's going to give you time to save because you're going to need it. So these are really high-end requirements. Basically, you're going to need a Intel Core i5, an NVIDIA GTX 970 or an AMD 290 graphics card, at least 8 gigs of RAM, HDMI 1.3, which those video cards will have built into them, two USB 3.0 ports, and Windows 7 Service Pack 1 or later. And so all told, this is probably about a $1,000 gaming computer you're talking.
You're talking about $1,000. And if you guys don't know, the Oculus Rift, who hasn't been listening, is like a VR system.
Yeah, so it's a virtual reality headset. And apparently it's going to require a lot of processing power because apparently what they're saying is in order to do a VR experience, it requires three times the processing power of doing a 1080 stream.
Which is nuts. That's a lot of processing power. And according to like apparently only 2% of Steam users currently even meet these requirements.
Yeah, so if you're a game developer and you know they're trying to entice you to build your game for Oculus and you see that only 2% of Steam's user base, which is a huge user base, even have the ability to run Oculus, that's going to really limit people wanting to develop for Oculus if they're developing for such a small market.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when you think about it, like if you had a high profile game that could actually go in, like we're just talking about Grand Theft Auto 5 or something in VR and Oculus first person, which they just released on the PC, like yeah, sure, that could get some people interested. But how many are actually going to go get it, and how much money is Rockstar going to have to pay to do something like that to actually run it on Oculus for only 2% of people who are even on Steam?
Yeah, and to just kind of put this in perspective, the video cards alone are $300+, and they have 4 gigs of memory just on the video cards. So for just the video card that this requires, you can buy an Xbox One.
No, yeah, it's really true. Like, in general, I don't know how many people are actually going to go out of their way just to be able to use the Oculus Rift for no games at this point or even mentioned or released so far.
Yeah, and granted, I mean, they're going after the PC gaming segment, which is a very different segment from consoles as well. Like, I have a, you know, it's a couple years old now, but it was a fairly high-end gaming PC when I built it. And it's a different type of crowd you're going after, but still, these are, you know, kind of top-of-the-line specs even for that group.
Yeah, I mean, looking at these specs alone, I don't know, you know, how if I'm even interested in going that far, because how much pre-work I'd have to do to be able to even use the Oculus, and we don't even have a cost for the Oculus alone.
Yeah, so you're talking at least $1,000 for the hardware to run Oculus, and then however much money Oculus is going to run, and then whatever games actually get developed to run on Oculus. So there's a lot of questionable factors right now.
Yeah, so in general, Oculus, I don't know if I'm interested. Maybe some people will go far enough, and you know, they're giving you a year's notice to get the equipment, but
yeah, so that's the other thing. You know, hardware prices drop pretty quickly. So a year from now, you know, GTX 970 will probably be half the cost it is right now. There'll be better, more powerful cards out next year, but it's still going to be an expensive proposition. And the other thing too is, for a lot of people who use gaming laptops, it's not going to work with any gaming laptops right now.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I see more people using laptops more than desktops nowadays, and the fact that you can't run it on a laptop is a huge disadvantage for Oculus in general.
Yeah, and then the fact it's also only going to be Windows as well. It's a really niche market. It seems like they're going after it first, but that might be the way to do it as well. Is like, all right, here are, because the people who have this hardware are going to be your most dedicated gamers. So if anyone's going to go after a product like this, it will be those dedicated high-end gamers.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're banking on the wow factor and the sort of elite nerd bling accessorizing to drive their popularity. You know, people are going to be making YouTube videos of this. They're going to be, you know, blogging about it, reviewing it. And, you know, people kind of hoping that you're going to get that cream of the PC gaming crop that's going to just do all the sort of free advertising for them and kind of try and bring the product in and lure people into using it. And also it may be the sort of thing where this is really just a technology demonstrator. You know, if it flops, they will have at least demonstrated that it works. Well, assuming it works. And then, you know, the second or third generation, you know, this may be the Google Glass of gaming, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, you know, a new version of this isn't going to come out that's actually going to be much more capable.
Well, what I'm intrigued by is the fact that Sony, actually right after the announcement of Oculus, announced their Morpheus VR headset for PS4.
Well, they announced that last year,
E3, but they actually announced the release date like around the same time as Oculus, which is a little intriguing, especially where you have the Morpheus running on a PlayStation 4 with not even half of these requirements.
Yeah, because basically the current generation of consoles, they're using x86-based architecture, which is the same thing as a PC. So those consoles out there, they are basically mid-range PCs. They're not, and even the Xbox One, that's later on this year, is going to get upgraded to Windows 10. So it'll be running the same software as these gaming PCs. But if it requires 3 times the processing power to get a steady 1080 stream as it does to do Oculus, I can't imagine what the gaming experience will be like for Project Morpheus if it's just going to be running on a standard PS4.
Yeah, it's intriguing to think about how it'll run when it's like totally different. Like, one's going to have to use like top of the line stuff and another one's like mid range, but they're trying to sell it as like the same product. So it's definitely going to see which one like is actually designed better to support which.
Yeah, and it's a little bit easier to justify, say the Oculus is $500 and you need a $1,000 gaming PC to run it. It's like, yeah, Okay, that's a little bit more of a justifiable price point versus $500 for a $400 PS4. You can't justify that. So what will the price point of Morpheus be, and are they going to be offloading some of that processing to the headset? Like, how are they going to be able to get it to have the same smooth experience with hardware that's not even half as powerful as these gaming PCs that are required for Oculus?
And it's going to be intriguing to see what comes out next. I know that Microsoft is starting work on theirs.
On their HoloLens.
Yeah, the HoloLens. And they just actually recruited, developer from Mass Effect?
Yes.
Yes, so they just...
is working exclusively on content for HoloLens. Yeah. And also Valve's VR headset, which is being built by HTC, they announced is coming out this fall.
Yeah, so there's so many VR headsets like on the docket to come out for so many different things and so many different systems. It'll be intriguing to see like which is which and which one actually comes out on top.
Yeah, it's like I wonder if anything's going to come of this or if this will be kind of like the 3D video game. For a little while, people are selling 3D monitors and glasses for computer gaming, but that didn't go anywhere. So I wonder if this is going to have the same result or if this will actually be a success. But that could be about your point earlier, Jacob, where they're going for kind of that top 2% to make it, you know, an exclusive thing. Like, okay, this is the most elite high-end thing you can get.
The iWatch edition
basically,
PC gaming.
It very well could be that and kind of make it a desirable item by having it so exclusive and so limited to a group of people. And also, the other thing of note is Oculus is owned by Facebook. So they've got the money to back it for the long game. They don't need this to make money when it comes out. They can take a loss on this for, you know, 10 years until the technology price point comes down and can be ubiquitous everywhere. So that's kind of the other thing that I think is important, too. It's like Sony kind of needs to make money on this because right now the bulk of their profit comes from their gaming market, while Facebook, they don't need to make any money on this at all. This can just sit and develop and grow over a course of years.
Yeah, so with how much we talked about that today, that'll be our toasty news for the day. All right, so we're going to go on to about more Xbox news that's not VR related, for Xbox at least. Testers leaked images of the remastered Gears of War for Xbox One. And as of that, they were banned from Xbox Live.
Which isn't unexpected, because in order to be a tester for any type of thing like that, you're going to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and there's going to be a lot of stipulations in there. If you break this agreement, what's going to happen? And they broke an NDA. So what did they expect?
Yeah, so if you guys don't know, Testers showed a site screen caps of a Locust Invasion with updated visuals, screenshots of multiplayer showing improved lighting and textures, and, you know, elements of the game running at 60 frames per second. And Microsoft ended up, got wind of it, found out, and permanently disabled their Xbox Live accounts.
I think that's kind of the interesting thing is, like, they have that ability to remotely completely disable their Xbox Live accounts.
Yeah, I mean, in general, like, apparently, like, they blocked them for a certain amount of time until they see fit, but it could be, like, permanently.
Yeah, but again, you know, the developer is making this at Microsoft's behalf. They're upgrading it. They've sent this out to these people to test it, to find bugs and everything. They signed an agreement, and then they broke it. So
I guess what it was is it was a Snapchat.
Yeah,
like they Snapchatted it, and somebody Snapchatted from that, and Snapchatted to that.
Yeah,
so like
someone Snapchatted it to a friend, say, "Hey, check out what I'm working on." They screen captured it, then put it up somewhere else. And I guess on all of these test versions, basically the person's name is right above their head, so you can clearly see who the user is that's playing the game at the moment. So it's easy to track down who it was that leaked it.
Not smart gamers.
Not a smart move at all.
We never said some gamers were the smartest of the bunch, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that they're doing this confirms they're doing a basically remastered edition of Gears of War isn't really shocking.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting. I mean, they'll probably announce this at E3. What would be more interesting is if they announced a remastered edition of Gears of War at the same time announce a new Gears of War.
That would be kind of interesting. I would like to see a new Gears of War, especially for the Xbox One.
Because you got to think they're working on a new Gears of War. They got the new Halo coming out this fall, and then that's kind of their other big staple.
Yeah, the two big properties are always Halo and Gears of War for Xbox, and it would be nice to see another Gears of War. I would think that a remastered edition of the first one is a lead up to a new Gears of War getting ready.
I would assume, too, they're probably doing something like they did with the Master Chief Collection, is when you buy that, you can get into like the multiplayer beta for Halo 5.
Yeah, it would
make sense.
They'd
probably do something like that as well.
Yeah. So on to some more, like, band news.
A lot of that this week.
Yeah, really. Blizzard has banned over 100,000 World of Warcraft accounts. Apparently, Blizzard banned more than 100,000 World of Warcraft accounts for 6 months, finding they were using bots or third-party programs for automated gameplay. In addition to the explanation of the ban, Blizzard encouraged World of Warcraft players to report accounts that they suspected they were cheating. They said, "We're committed to providing an equal and fair playing field for everyone in World of Warcraft, and will continue to take action against these found in violation of our terms of use." And the company read, "Cheating in of any form will not be tolerated."
So I wonder if these bots, they were just kind of gold farming, or
that's my guess. I think they were people were using them to gold farm, and I think this has a big to do with being able to use gold to buy gaming time now.
Yeah, because that would just be an incentive, like, okay, I'm going to work. If I can just let this bot run all day while I'm gone, it can harvest all this gold, and basically I can keep playing World of Warcraft for free when I am around. Yeah. As opposed to having to pay a monthly fee for it in real
cash.
Pay
the $15, people. Yeah. Just pay the money, okay?
But the scale of this is kind of I mean, granted, I know World of Warcraft has, you know, 10 million subscribers or whatever
it is. I think they're down to 7 million, as we talked about last week.
But still, like, 100,000 people. That is a huge number of people to be banned.
It is. And to be honest, you wonder, to be honest, how many of these were just gold farmers in, like, China and stuff, like, trying to sell gold, which is definitely going to be taking a hit now with the gold for game time addition they just added. In general, I don't think it's going to be a huge loss. I think most of these 100,000 accounts were probably gold farmers from China or other countries trying to make a buck off of gold. I think some people will be hurt by it, but I think in general it'll probably make the game better, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's only going to improve the game if you get rid of people who are just cheating the system.
I'm going to be honest, it probably will mess up the economy for a little bit in the World of Warcraft, but I mean, after a while, we'll settle down and probably be better, overall better.
Yeah, in the long run, it'll even itself out and be better off after this.
Yeah, I mean, the economy is always a huge deal when it comes to World of Warcraft, obviously, and there's been fluctuations of when things have gone down and up, and, you know, overall, I mean, this will, like I just said, this will hurt it, but I think it will settle itself down.
Yeah, I mean, like any market, it'll recover and even out eventually.
You know, back in the days of Ultima Online, this wasn't a problem. I'm just saying, those were good years.
Good years. Well, they can be better years.
They can be better.
But in other World of Warcraft news.
Yes, we're on to screen-to-screen news, which, ironically, is more World of Warcraft news. I'm guessing a lot of you are going right now, what? More World of Warcraft news? It's screen-to-screen. What are you talking about? Well, we're talking about the World of Warcraft movie.
Yeah, please. These people live on the internet. They know exactly what you're talking about.
Especially if they're WoW players or any sort of Blizzard fanboy. They know this is coming.
Well, it's been very quiet for a long time about this film. So I would expect that a lot of people maybe even have forgotten about it. So World of Warcraft released the first image of Orgrim the Orc. So basically, they released this really cool image, and it's going to be the actor in makeup and CGI, mostly CGI, and it's supposed to be very realistic CGI. And looking at the picture, which we have on our Facebook page and Twitter, it does look really good. I'm very impressed so far.
Yeah, and this is kind of the first official look we've gotten at any sort of production shot from the film. And it is really, I mean, Blizzard has always done a fantastic job with their animations. They have top-notch animators. And this looks right up on par with their cutscenes, except with a real actor.
Yeah, and the fact that the story is actually going to be taking place for the original Warcrafters, Orcs and Humans, and it's being written by the guy who, like, developed the game and, like, was writing for the game. He's writing the film, and I think that's really cool in general as well. And I think that gives very high hopes for a film like this, which we didn't hear a lot about until we see this first picture. And I'm going to be honest, I'm more excited for a trailer now.
Yeah, well, I wonder if we'd end up seeing a trailer at E3 then, because if they have this and it's a little over a year away, they got to have enough material to be close to putting out a trailer.
I mean, they're done shooting. They've finished shooting. And this the film was actually supposed to be released this December, but they postponed it due to Star Wars being announced for being released there. Because as much as World of Warcraft is this huge mega gaming thing, they knew Star Wars, they're not going to want to compete against
that. And you're going after a similar audience with those two franchises.
It's true, yeah.
So I would think we might see something at E3. I mean, that would be the perfect venue to put out at least a sneak peek trailer of a World of Warcraft movie.
I mean, that or BlizzCon. I would actually be more inclined to see it at BlizzCon.
Yeah, but BlizzCon isn't until the fall.
Yeah, and that would make more sense, especially with a summer release.
Yeah, I mean, I could see either, but they'll definitely either do a sneak peek at E3 than have a full trailer for BlizzCon or something like that.
Or PAX East, but that's a little soon. That's too far away. That's too close to the actual release of the film. One can dream. So, in general, they had two pictures released. They were really kind of cool. Basically, the film is going to be released on June 10th, 2016 by Universal. And, yeah, it's a little ways away, but, you know, that gives hope for next summer. You know, it's not a sequel. You know, there we go, guys. It's not a sequel or a remake. There's hope for next summer.
Are you a WoW player, Jacob?
I am not. However, when it comes to other franchises such as Warhammer, I am a big orc fan. So Warcraft or no Warcraft, I'm going to be there opening night to see this.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of my question, is like kind of where this movie will fall, because, I mean, it's a Blizzard making a film, but I don't play WoW either. So part of me has no investment into this series or this world, so kind of the enticement of that film isn't as strong. Like, it might be, I mean, I'll be able to judge more once I see a trailer, but it's like, oh, that looks really cool. I don't know if I really care about a two-hour movie
And actually, just in terms of the technology of the filmmaking, I think this is going to be really impressive. I was a huge fan of the practical effects in Lord of the Rings when it came to the orcs and the goblins. Hated the Hobbit creature effects. The CG, I thought, was just awful.
Hey, it looked much worse than the Lord of the Rings films. Yeah.
So I think this, if they're going to be able to mate those two worlds, the practical effects and the digital map over, to create something that allows you to get larger than life, you know, those big classic sort of Games Workshop and Blizzard over-muscled orcs with an actual, you know, mo-capped or practical affected actor at the core of that creature, this is going to be a real step forward in the way of making fantasy and science fiction filmmaking.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder how much of what they're putting in the filmmaking is stuff they've learned from doing cutscenes for the game, or if they do that all as animation, or if they do motion capture for the actors for those cutscenes. I'm not sure.
That's a really good question, actually.
Yeah, obviously, Blizzard's cutscenes are like one of the biggest things they do, and they're always beautiful. They're greatly, magnificently done.
Oh, I saw the one for, was it
Overwatch?
It
looked like a Pixar film, basically. The Overwatch cinematic looked gorgeous.
I don't know. Maybe it was Warlords of Draenor. It involved this huge orc, and there was some sort of demon.
That was Warlords of Draenor.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't play World of Warcraft, but I love watching it. And, you know, it's like several minutes long. It is like a little mini film, and it looks so good.
Yeah, you should check out the cinematic they released for Overwatch, because I think it was like 5 or 6 minutes. It's basically a little film, and it's just fantastic. I mean, it's Pixar quality animation.
Yeah.
Blizzard always does a great job with these kind of, you know, definitely the any kind of intro trailers or intro effects, like great stuff to do. So we're going to move on to Disney stuff, which is Marvel, basically. We're going to move on to a lot of Marvel stuff. So basically, Disney's D23 convention will include Star Wars and Marvel presentations. But the big news here is that Marvel will be skipping San Diego Comic-Con. And basically, it'll go to D23, which takes place a month after that. And Star Wars, they don't know yet if it's going to be at San Diego Comic-Con.
There are going to be a lot of really angry nerds.
Yeah, it seems like a big mistake. It's like, why not have a presence at both? Because both are going to sell out no matter what. And you're just going to please fans at both. And I think DC, I would think, would be really excited to hear this, because this means this opens up San Diego Comic-Con to kind of be exclusively for DC content. And last year, they did that just a little teaser trailer of the logo for Batman versus Superman. And not too long ago, they put out the first trailer of the film.
They're better off with just the logo.
This is true. But you figure this will be, you know, this can kind of turn into DC's show with Marvel moving out.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if DC makes a bigger appearance. I think this is more of a ploy for Disney to get more headcount, more people at to their D23 convention.
But it's, do you really need a bigger headcount? Like, I'm not familiar with their convention, but it's Disney. It already has that draw already.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with
you. Why not do both?
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree. Like, they really should have at least some kind of showing of both and maybe do, like, their big reveal at D23, like, if that's what they want to do. But the fact to take it away from Bolt, like, in general, all the way from San Diego Comic-Con in general is kind of big.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're taking away from, you know, the panels, the signings. Like, if you're really not going to have a Marvel presence at all, like, actors, writers, anything like that, that's a really bad idea.
Well, and also it'd be kind of strange, too, especially since this summer Marvel Comics is trying to merge basically their cinematic universe with their comic universe. And I'm assuming they would still have a comic presence there, but then to not have the cinematic end of that would be a huge loss.
Very awkward, yeah.
Yeah, and in general, I don't see why they're doing it this way, but I guess D23 will preview Disney's upcoming slate of live-action films, including both Marvel and Lucasfilm. An undisclosed special guest will appear at the event. So it seems like that they're doing everything at D23.
Which is odd because they have, I can't remember if there's two or three Marvel films next year. There's at least two. And then there's going to be, you know, at least one Star Wars. So they could easily spread this out between the two events and basically share the love with as many fans as possible, as opposed to limiting it.
They really could. I mean, if you're going to have some kind of, like, presence, I mean, maybe just, like, throw San Diego Comic-Con Ant-Man. It comes out this year. It comes out within a month or, like, around, like, a couple of weeks before or after San Diego Comic-Con. At least do something there.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to have a lack of content that they could provide. I mean, they could cut together multiple little reveals and you know, exclusive trailers. I mean, the material is there.
Yeah, I mean,
just use it.
Show a teaser for Civil War. They're filming. They're, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's all getting done right now. You might as well.
And also, you have so many projects going on, it wouldn't be hard to get actors from each project to go to the two events. You know, just have different actors at different events. That wouldn't be hard to do, considering how massive of a cast they have between all their properties to choose from.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I think one of their D23 convention special guests will probably be the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which seems maybe that's why they're kind of waiting for this as well. I think that's why. I mean, yeah, I agree. You don't have to show this at San Diego Comic-Con, but at least do something there.
Well, I wonder if this would show up at D23 because Spider-Man is still technically under Sony, but they're basically doing a joint venture with Marvel to have him appear in the Marvel films, but Sony's still going to make standalone Spider-Man films.
Yes, but we'll also include characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird little agreement they have going on. It's kind of like Spider-Man is back in the fold, but Sony still has the rights to him.
I think it's more of a fact of Sony is actually really losing a lot of money right now. And this is an agreement with Disney and Marvel saying, with Sony basically saying, all right, well, we can use Spider-Man. You can use our stuff too. You can make standalone films. But if you go out of business, we take Spider-Man. Like, yeah. I think that's what's going on here.
Well, it's like, I don't think Sony Pictures isn't in any danger of going out of business because that's one of the few sections that is still making money. And even though the last Spider-Man films didn't do as well, they still made a lot of money.
They did. But I think in general, Sony Pictures is like riding the back tail of everybody else right now. And they really need to step it up. And this is a way to do that. So I'm hopefully they will. But in overall, it's a win-win for Disney.
And definitely really for Sony, if they can get some of those other characters to come into the Spider-Man films and not be limited to just the Spider-Man villains.
Yeah. So, but according to reports, Asa Butterfield is the frontrunner to play Peter Parker in the latest Spider-Man reboot. The 18-year-old actor has apparently been shortlisted to play Spidey and will be testing for the role this week. However, no offer has been made, and it's being said that since he is still testing, he's merely likely rather than a definite one. So apparently there's been a lot of talk, especially last week, that he was cast. You know, he's definitely cast, but it's coming out now that he's just still testing with a group of actors.
Yeah, so it sounds just kind of like we definitely know he's auditioning for the role in addition to other people.
I mean, it just seems like it's coming off as he is one of the favorites.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the role yet, but, you know, they're just talking about it this way.
Yeah, and then it'll all come down to basically time and availability, money, and all that stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that will play into that. But he would probably make a decent candidate. I mean, he was good in the Ender's Game film. And
it
also
certainly
in Hugo.
Showed that he could suspend from a wire and be lowered into space.
This is very
so,
true.
You know, there you go. That's what you need.
That's like half the role right there.
Right there. Like, okay, can you fit into a harness and can we lower you up and down? Okay, you're good. You're good.
Well, and the thing I like that they've said is the next Spider-Man film will not be an origin story. It's like we've already seen his origin story twice. So it'll be nice to kind of get a Spider-Man film that kind of more jumps into the things rather than having to go through the whole process of seeing again how he gets his abilities and Uncle Ben and all that.
And yet, Green Goblin. Yeah. Green Goblin again. Stop with the Green Goblin already. Just put it away. Put it in the drawer. Shut the drawer. Lock the drawer.
So what Jacob's talking about is that there's a rumor that Marvel wants Matthew McConaughey to play Norman Osborn / the Green Goblin for this Spider-Man reboot.
It is a flat circle, okay? The Green Goblin situation is a flat circle, and Matthew McConaughey's presence confirms it.
Yeah, and it's like there's enough other villains in that universe, especially now that they're the two Marvel and Sony are combining. So it's like, do something else. It's like, okay, you want to not do another orange story and freshen it up, but then you're going to go back to the same villain we've seen twice before.
And it seems very likely, being McConaughey actually did report that he was reading several scripts for DC and Marvel. So it seems like this is actually more than a rumor. It's more of like he was given a script and now it's up to him.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's probably has his pick of roles after how well he's done in True Detective. Then he won an Academy Award last year, the year before. So he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, he's definitely an actor with enough weight behind him that, you know, they're going to tailor whatever property they can to get him in on the big screen.
Yeah, and he can kind of pick and choose whatever he wants to do.
So Spider-Man will first see him in Captain America Civil War, which the Civil War cast list was released last week.
Which means actually then that they have to cast him soon because I believe they've already started filming Civil War.
They did, but my thought is that Spider-Man won't have a huge role, mm-hmm. so that's why they don't mind not putting him down on the list or anything like that.
He'll swing by and splat against a window in the middle of a firefight.
You know? Swing by, take off his mask, I'm Peter Parker, and fly out.
End scene.
But the cast list obviously was released. There's some names we obviously know, like Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow because she's in every Captain America film. And some of the names, you know, Falcon is obviously back. And a couple of names we didn't know we'd see is War Machine will be back as well. Hawkeye, Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes, Winter Soldier, Scarlet Witch, The Vision, and a big one actually is Ant-Man.
This is really more of like a cast encyclopedia here. I mean, it just goes on. And really, this is Captain America Civil War is really turning into kind of Avengers 2.5 at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like
really
an Avengers light.
Yeah,
I mean, the only people who are in the Avengers who are not on this list would be the Hulk and Thor. And they have reasonable reasons now for leaving. Obviously, the Hulk is they don't know where. He took off. And Thor is in Asgard.
I'm also curious. We don't have any of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. people. Like Coulson isn't on this list, and Nick Fury isn't on this list either. So
yeah, I mean,
you got to have Nick Fury. There's yet to be a Marvel film without him. He had kind of a smaller role in Age of Ultron, so I'd assume it would be kind of a smaller role like that again.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee he'll pop up at some point. The name that actually really intrigues me on here is General Thunderbolt Ross. That really intrigues me. Basically, we didn't see him, and it's the same actor who played him in The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, which really was pulling from the Wayback Machine.
2010? 2008.
So it's been a long time since we've seen him, and the fact they got the original actor from the 2008 Incredible Hulk, with Ed Norton, by the way, not Mark Ruffalo, the fact that he's coming back is a pretty big thing. I mean, you're definitely going to get some Hulk talk in there, I think.
Yeah, and he was good in that role, and it makes it even more interesting that he's coming from the Hulk movie, but we're not going to have a Hulk in it, at least from this cast list. And I'm excited to see more of the Vision, because the Vision was a great character in Age of Ultron.
Yeah, and we didn't get to see a lot of him. He was more towards the last 10-15 minutes. So to see more of him in this part, especially with the intrigue of the Infinity Stone in his forehead, and mm-hmm. more talk on that will be interesting.
Yeah, and then having Scarlet Witch as a major character in this as well, because again, she wasn't one of the principal characters of Ultron. She's kind of one of the more side ones. But I wonder, almost kind of an Avengers type of issue too, is like, how are you going to balance this giant cast? Because, you know, you used to be with the other Captain America movies, it's about Captain America and, you know, some of his squad mates, but he is the central character.
Yeah, especially when you have somebody like Robert Downey Jr. on this list as Tony Stark. If you have Tony Stark in there, it's hard to make Captain America like the. I feel like this is just they wanted to do a Civil War, so like, oh, well, we need a Captain America movie. So, like, Captain America, Civil War.
Yeah, and if you've got a Civil War, you've got to have two sides. And if you got two sides, you're going to stock both sides with some heavy-hitting characters. So.
Yeah, but actually, like, some of my favorite scenes in Ultron were the scenes between Captain America and Iron Man. Like, the scenes where they're both out there just chopping wood and the conversation back and forth, those were really well done.
Yeah, I think they've actually been doing a great job of planting the seeds of this conflict for, you know, movie after movie after movie. And it's maybe the sort of comics blind fans aren't picking up on it, but those people who kind of know where this is eventually going, you know, they're getting a lot of enjoyment out of that.
Yeah, because they've kind of always been at odds throughout all of these films. Like, they work together once an issue comes up, but they have very different principles.
Right, right.
So moving on from Avengers 2.5 to Avengers 3 is we have news about Infinity War, which is parts 1 and 2, which will be filmed entirely using a new IMAX camera.
Yeah, and I believe this is the first IMAX camera that's going to be all digital.
Yeah, and it's going to be the first Hollywood film feature film actually shot with it.
It's kind of surprising considering how far away this film is.
Yeah, especially. I mean, I guess it's going to take a while to get them, but I guess the shooting schedule, they're going to be shooting all this at once. So it definitely makes sense that you're getting this information now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes sense they would shoot both parts at once. I mean, that's what they did with the Lord of the Rings movies and whatnot. Just get everyone together at one time, do one long set of shooting, and then cut it up afterwards.
Yep. So in this, basically, Marvel's Avengers Infinity Wars Parts 1 and 2 will be the first Hollywood feature shot entirely using the Alexa 65, a brand new digital camera created by IMAX and Arri. Basically, the directors announced this on May 8th. And with the new camera, IMAX and Arri hope to take full advantage of the IMAX new laser projection system, which began rolling out, which has begun recently rolling out into theaters. And basically, they're also using some of it to shoot some action sequences with the upcoming Civil War for Captain America.
Yeah, I see like the Civil War use almost as being like a test bed. It's a way for them to kind of experiment with it, see what works, what doesn't, and kind of put it in and just like use it in a few scenes and see how to work with it and shoot with it as opposed to doing it with their standard cameras. Because I love seeing movies that are actually shot in IMAX. It's a really different experience.
No, it really is.
Because the aspect ratio will actually change depending on the scene. So a lot of your scenes will be your standard 16:9. But then they'll expand to fill the entire scene. I'm not sure what the ratio is for those full IMAX scenes, but it just takes up this entire 8-story screen. It's incredible.
Well, yeah, and especially if any of this goes into something like outer space,
the
ability to break out of that letterbox standard, you know, movie theater format and really, you know, take advantage of that three-dimensional screen space, you know, the X and the Y axes will be incredibly impressive.
Yeah, because Interstellar was shot in IMAX, and that was an incredible experience just to kind of add that expansive depth to it. And kind of the issue with traditional film IMAX cameras is they're really big, they're really heavy, and they're also super loud. Like, it almost sounds like a two-stroke motor going as the film runs through it. Mm. And so the fact that they can now switch this to a digital format, it'll be a lot smaller, lighter, and more importantly, quiet. Because basically, whenever you shoot in IMAX, basically you have to ADR everything.
Yeah, and speaking of those space scenes, it definitely seems like something I would have liked to see in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like looking at some of the shot, I felt like some of the time it would have been fantastic to see some of those in the big IMAX shot. And especially with Avengers Infinity War, if there's going to be a crossover with this, it'd be really cool to see.
Or I'm thinking more Star Wars.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that'd be crazy, actually. Yeah.
Now, do we know if the second Guardians movie will come out before Infinity War?
Yes, it will.
See, yeah. Well, Interesting. So it's probably not going to have a chance to be shot using this.
Well, technology. I would say it'd probably be a similar thing as Captain America's. They'll probably shoot parts of it in it. So maybe like the big space battle sequences or just flight sequences, they'll shoot it in that full IMAX range. And yeah, then the rest of it will be the standard 16:9 with regular cameras.
Although I wonder, then they'd have to... You'd run into the trouble of, if you're going to show that footage in a standard format theatrical experience, you know, it kind of like the old problem of switching from letterbox to 3x4 on televisions, you got to make sure that you're not going to have anything story critical in that up and down the space above and below, because that's going to have to get cut in order to fit in a theatrical experience. So
yeah, and I think that's kind of something they must account for, because same thing, I saw Dark Knight Rises in IMAX, and you know, kind of, it seems like the kind of bigger, wider scenes just kind of show like landscapes and expansive shots. They do that, but they're conscious that like, okay, all the central information is still going to be in that kind of 16:9 area, but if you can see an IMAX, you get like a bigger visual.
Yeah, it just opens up the vista.
Yeah.
All right, so on to a trailer that was released yesterday, which I am excited for ever since I heard about it, was the Cooties trailer starring Elijah Wood and Ryan Wilson. I know I watched it. You guys obviously checked it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, it's about when a mysterious virus hits an isolated elementary school, transforming the kids into a feral swarm of mass savages. An unlikely hero must lead a motley band of teachers to fight for their lives.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it's Cooties.
Yes.
So, and it's in the chicken pox, but it doesn't affect you if you've hit puberty.
Yes. So basically, it's a zombie film about elementary school kids and the teachers trying to escape and killing elementary school children.
This is going to be quite the escapist film here.
It looks completely it reminds me a little bit of Zombieland, because they had like a bunch of scenes of like kind of little kids in ballerina costumes that were zombies, and but yeah, just expanding upon that. And those scenes were great and really entertaining. So I was skeptical of this when I heard about it, but the trailer looks it's very self-aware of what it is.
Yeah.
And it's having fun with it.
It's definitely the brand of like horror comedy.
Yeah, and in the trailer, they even had a scene where they, you know, kind of call themselves out. It's like, you know that scene in every movie where all the characters get suited up and ready for battle? This is that scene.
So it's definitely, it seems interesting. The film premiered actually in January of 2014 at the 2014 Sundance Film Festival. So it's been out for a little while, and a lot of people have already seen it. It'll be released in select theaters and digital on demand on September 18th. Which it seems like this is what a lot of those limited release films are doing now. They're going with digital on demand and limited release at the same time.
Yeah, which is kind of nice, because if you live someplace where you don't really have a smaller theater that might get something like this, like we're lucky we're in Boston, so there's a lot of smaller art house theaters that will show this type of film. But if you're somewhere else where you'd have to, you know, maybe drive an hour plus in order to find a theater that would have that, it's like, all right, you can just, you know, rent it on your Apple TV or any of those type of digital streaming devices and have it the day it comes out.
Right. And this is, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a fun movie, but this is not the sort of cinematic experience in which you need to pay $14 to sit in a big stadium-style theater. They're smart enough to realize, you know, people are going to be perfectly happy doing a digital rental or, you know, catching it on Netflix or whatever and watching it at home. This is not the kind of film that you need the in-theater experience for.
Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely check it out. It's definitely a movie where I'll check out. I mean, this is like one of those games where, you know, hey, let's take a shot every time a kid dies, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I don't think I'd probably bother seeing this in theaters, but I would definitely be interested in renting at some point, because I'm sure it would be entertaining to experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially Elijah Wood, Ryan Wilson.
Yeah,
it seems like it's
the
cast
they have
it
for it too. Like, it very much is the plot of like a B movie, but within A-list cast.
Right.
Yes. And, you know, child murder. Who doesn't love that, right, guys? Come on.
So they're zombies, they're already dead.
So speaking
That's
of,
how you get away with it.
So speaking of child murder, we're on to Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones for episode 6. Sadly, we have less than half episodes left. There's only 4 episodes left now. It makes me a little sad.
Yeah, and like the pacing of this season definitely seems like we're only maybe a third of the way through it.
It really does. Like, it's been going kind of slow.
It's going to have to ramp up quick.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is partly because they're running out of book material at this point, because this is books 5 and 6, and that's all we 4 and 5 actually is what this season's based on.
Yeah, it's definitely a mix between, and there was definitely a lot of reveals in this, and like surprise, like endings, like not just one surprise, like they threw a bunch at you, which makes me intrigued because they said that this episode wasn't a good enough stopping point where they're actually going to show one during this Memorial Day, and I felt it could have been. There was a lot of like little shock value, like surprises where I felt they could have stopped for a week for like a mid-season kind of thing.
I mean, they very easily could have. There's a lot of setup in this episode and kind of leaving characters in predicaments of what's going to happen next.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll start off with the thing that I actually was a little confused on, to be honest, was Arya and the Faceless. Basically, her continuing story of becoming a faceless assassin. And it confused me a little bit. I don't know. I don't feel like the pacing of this scenes or her scenes this so far in this episode, but I mean,
well, she also she was not in the last episode at all, so they had to fit more information into this episode.
But it felt like it was too much at once. If I'm honest, it was like a bulk of Arya at you, and you kind of like were going forward with it, and some of it you just were like,
I think they needed to pace some of those situations correctly, but then get over the hump of the information to the reveal of the big chamber.
Yeah, because we've spent a lot of time just watching her wash dead bodies, and you know, we get that she's been doing that for quite a while, but there's been a lot of drawn-out scenes of her, you know, tearing to these dead bodies and then them going off to some mysterious place and not knowing what happens. But then we finally, towards the end of her scene, did see... We didn't really get answers, but we did see this giant cavern with all these pillars that have all these faces in them. And it almost, I'm really curious to learn more about this, but at first glance, it just reminds me of kind of the Mission Impossible mask where they had the silicone mask they would print and just put on.
I'm wondering if this is a place where the faceless assassins go and just sort of they study these faces so that they can kind of imprint mentally the image of the face so that when they change their appearance, you know, they're actually just sort of pulling from a mental catalog of appearances. Like, oh yeah, I remember, I want to look like a fat merchant. I remember the fat merchant on Pillar 23, Row 37. Yes, he looked like a real scumbag. I'll pretend to be him.
Yeah, and I wonder if part of this is kind of magical based, because there is magic in this world. They don't really touch on it a ton, but it might be these faceless assassins is part of a magical thing of what allows them to take on the face of others.
I think that's what it is. It's some sort of mysticism going on. Maybe other people out there who know more about this portion of the book could fill it in, because I have not read this far. But I think this falls into mythical sort of ninjutsu territory where you're ascribing mystical powers to these assassins. And I think the ability to change one's facial appearance definitely falls. Actually, didn't the assassins in Dune have the ability to change their faces? Or am I thinking of some other sci-fi Ooh. Property? You know, like manipulate the muscles within their face to look different.
I'm trying to remember. I haven't read Dune in a long time, but that does sound like a Dune type of thing they would have. Yeah. You know, something to do with the spice and allows them to change their muscle features or
something along those lines, yeah.
Internet, fill us in.
Comment on our page below. So basically, we go from there to Jaime and Bronn, who we didn't see last episode either, and a fight between them and the Sand Snakes for Marcella. So that was a very intriguing fight.
And also they revealed that Marcella and I can't remember the prince's name are basically going to be married.
Yeah.
And are in love.
And are in love.
It's not just a political marriage at this point. They have actually become...
Something we don't see in Game of Thrones a lot. Something we don't see in Game of Thrones a lot. Love.
Yeah. And that would be a really powerful union between Dorne and the Lannisters. Yeah.
But I do not see it happening.
Oh, no. As we always know, anything beautiful must be crushed.
Crushed hard.
Yeah.
So basically, they have a fight for Marcella, basically, and they're stopped by the guards of Dorne.
But not before Bronn is scratched by a weapon. And since there is a specific cut to show the scratch, we know that Bronn is probably poisoned.
Oh, yes, because Oberyn's fought with a poison blade.
Yeah, I can only imagine that calling that moment out specifically with a cut a scene cut. It will come back. My theory is that with all this lead-up talk amongst how Braun would die will culminate in him having to sacrifice himself. This is me making a prediction here. Sacrifice himself somehow to get Jaime and Marcella out of Dorne. You know, he's going to give himself up in some sort of altruistic manner. You know, there'll be some quippy line. And I'll be really sad to see him go because he's my number one favorite character of the entire series. But since they're really, you know, we're in the twilight hours of the series itself, you know, we're on the backslope of Game of Thrones. We're going to start losing characters that we have been loving, you know, since the beginning. I just hope he goes out well.
Yeah, I'll be disappointed to lose him because he's a very frank, very upfront character in a world where everything is deception and lies. And he's just, you know, nope, this is what I want and I'm going to do what I can to get it. And that's the story.
It's definitely something you like about him and why people probably like that character in general.
Yeah, and he's just a smartass. He doesn't care who you are. He will be a smartass to you. It doesn't matter you're Jaime Lannister.
And speaking of Jaime Lannister and Bronn, we have Tyrion and Jorah. And basically, Tyrion tells Jorah about his father's death beyond the wall because he did not know yet.
Yeah, that was a very touching moment there. I appreciated the way they handled that.
Yeah, and then things went bad, obviously, from there because they were kidnapped by slavers.
But there's slavers who are then going to throw Jorah into a gladiatorial combat arena.
At the recently opened fighting pits.
Can only mean awesomeness, in my opinion.
Yeah, which... assumingly, most likely, Khaleesi is going to be at those fighting pits for that fight, and she's going to see him thrown into the pit.
Or they handle it gladiator style, and by gladiator, I do mean Russell Crowe gladiator, and have him wear some sort of helmet or mask, and then he kicks butt and cuts a whole bunch of people apart, and then pulls off the mask, and boom, we have the reveal, and it's all
bam
impressive.
And then obviously Tyrion saved his own life as well, but in a different way.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to get into the minutiae or not minutiae of that situation.
Yes, well, Tyrion saved his life in a way Tyrion would save his life.
Talking his way out of it.
Yes. And then we had Cersei talking to Littlefinger, and we basically discovered Littlefinger's plans a little more, which is very intriguing.
Yeah,
I did not see this coming.
Yeah, for a while it's been like, what is Littlefinger's plan? Whose side is he on? Well, he's on his own side always.
Pretty much.
But, you know, kind of what is his goal? Because he was setting up Sansa. You know, he's the one who brought her to Winterfell, arranged that she should be married to a Bolton, and with the hopes that Stannis would attack and name her Warreness of the North if he won. But now we reveal he's the one who wants to kind of ride in after they have their battle and become the Warden of the North.
Yeah, and what's really intriguing about this is that he, like, pretty much promises Cersei to bring him Sansa's head.
Which you know he will not do.
Yeah.
He has too much affection for her to kill her.
Yeah, so definitely it's a big play here that, you know, he actually tells her that Sansa is at Winterfell.
Yeah.
And that, in general, for letting him having the volunteers, the Vale, to go after the battle to get her and take over Winterfell. And then says he wants to be Warden of the North.
Yeah, but then when he was speaking to, I believe it was Bolton, he said the last time the Knights of the Vale and the North united, they took down the mightiest dynasty the Westeros had ever seen. So, I mean, he could also go in that direction as well.
Nice. It seems like he wants Roose Bolton to fall, definitely. But it seems like he wants everybody to fall so he can rise up.
Yeah, I think he wants Roose Bolton and Stannis to mostly eliminate heat. Each other so he can ride in for the easy win and then probably eventually move on King's Landing. Because you know he won't be satisfied with just the North.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, it's hard to say. And maybe the whole idea of the White Walkers is in his head at some point. Like, maybe he wants to take that over and then he'll partner with the Black Watch. I never... try and guess exactly what Littlefinger's endgame is, because of all the characters on the show, He definitely is the one who is playing the most number of chess moves ahead of everyone else.
He really is.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's always an intriguing character to watch just because he always has some sort of plan going, and it's always shifting. I always like Varys' comment that he is the most dangerous man in Westeros because, you know, he would see it burned, all burned to the ground so he could be the King of the Ashes.
Yeah, and that brings us to more stuff in King's Landing, which is the Faith Militant doing the trial for Lawrence.
This was very well played by Cersei.
Yeah, basically the trial was whether he was gay or not, and like whether he slept with a man, and he lied and said he didn't, and Margaery lied and said he didn't, and basically they proved it wrong, and then they took Margaery into custody as well for lying.
While Tommen just watches and does nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to actually do something and not be spineless, but so far he has no, he's the exact opposite of Joffrey. He has no will of his own.
Yeah, and it's very hard to watch, especially with, like, I'm sure most fans do, like, the disgust for Cersei at this point, like, with how she operates everything.
Yeah, no one wants to see her get a win, even if it may be a temporary one. And who knows? I mean, the way this show goes, we could see Margaery dead in two episodes or even next episode. You never know.
Yeah.
I really like the scene between Cersei and Margaery's mother, grandmother. I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
Right, right.
But she is a fantastic actress. And like the scenes between her and Cersei's father were fantastic.
Well, and the interesting thing was she went into that scene with Cersei thinking that her sort of sharp, honest talk and blunt demeanor, which had served her so well for so long, was going to get her the same results it usually does. And this time around, like, Cersei really did outplay her.
Yeah.
And even at the end of their conversation, she was just kind of shut down. And, you know, then they went into the trial, and she's like, oh, you know, this is, thinking this was a whole bunch of nonsense. And then when they kind of pulled out that card, it's like, you know what? Kings and queens are not above the law of the gods.
Yeah.
And she just sort of went, ooh, you know, this is a situation that my blunt talk and forthright, you know, matriarchal manner is not going to get us out of.
However, the line you just said there is not above kings and queens. I feel like that's going to come around to bite her in the ass.
You mean bite Cersei? Cersei?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
That's well, if the whole incest card gets played out at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's out there a little too much now for, you know, at some point someone is going
to
play it.
Especially sending Jaime out to collect Marcella. That's a big, like, maybe, like, spotlight on that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for right now, no one knows where Jaime is.
That's true. So it will be – might be revealed at some point. But so the other – the bigger news with the episode, which everybody seems to talk about, is Sansa and Ramsay's wedding, being married. So I don't know about you guys. The first person I want to see dead is Ramsay.
I was watching that, and I mean, it's a horrible moment. And just seeing Theon just trembling with literally impotent rage – unable to do anything. He has been so physically and emotionally broken. Or at least those of us watching know or hope that he is going to be able to redeem himself and do in Ramsay in the most horrifying and satisfying way possible.
Yes.
But until that time, we are just going to be grinding our teeth with frustration here.
Well, I thought the interesting thing with him this episode was, first of all, we saw him all cleaned up and in dress garb for the first time. He actually looked human again. And then he stated his name of who he actually was for the first time in a long time.
Right.
You know, when he gave her at the wedding, he said, "I am Theon of House Greyjoy."
Yeah, so I think that combined with this, I'm hoping that, yes, this scene was horrible. You know, a lot of people talking about, like, you know, a rape scene between Ramsay and Sansa, that's not, you know, okay. But I feel like it's going to play a bigger role, and it was used for a reason of maybe an alliance finally between Sansa and Theon, and maybe like a connection between them to the point of maybe trying to get out of this.
Yeah, or kill him.
Or kill him, yes.
Yeah, it's like this is definitely going to the two of them have a bigger part to play together in the future of the season.
Yeah, I definitely see that happening. And I definitely, you know, obviously a lot of people were like, oh, this is a different character in the books than when it happened here. I think in general, like, it's still the same scene. It was still in the book.
It's more horrific in the books, actually.
Yeah, the scene in the book was actually a lot more graphical. On here, they actually panned away from it when it was happening onto Theon, who he made watch. So I felt like they did it in a little more better way than they could have. They could have been much worse if they actually copied the source material exactly. So, I mean, a lot of people are in uproar about this. I don't see the big deal about it. You know, it's obviously, this isn't basic cable. This isn't cable. This is HBO. It's not like, you know, Game of Thrones is used to doing this kind of stuff in general. Especially there was a little bit, the scene with Jaime and Cersei.
Right.
Which was a little more for people to get over, because that actually wasn't in the book whatsoever.
And also, they had kind of been building Jaime up as a more sympathetic character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then he does that, and then we almost immediately, it seems, go right back to treating him as a sympathetic character.
So that felt like it was more out of place than this scene. I think, if anything, that scene was more out of place. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrific, terrible part of this story that this overall story has a lot of horrific and terrible parts to it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not out of the realm for Game of Thrones to have a horrible thing like this happen to her. I mean, well, just look at everything else that has happened to her.
Yes, if you're watching Game of Thrones,
she had her father beheaded in front of her.
Yeah.
So she's had a really rough couple of years since coming to King's Landing.
Definitely. All right, so I think that's going to do it for this week, guys. Jacob, thanks for joining us.
Oh, very welcome. Thank you.
Yep. If you guys have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, you can email us at nerdspastics@gmail.com. And don't forget to like us on Nerdspastics on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And next week for you guys, we'll actually have our Loot Crate episode, which will actually be kind of cool. It's an Avengers Unite theme this month, so we'll see what we get there. And as always, guys, stay nerdy. Bye.
I don't want to go.